Sam Ryder has been a U.S. State Department musical ambassador, taking his accordion to at least six nations. For 6 years, Ryder has been band leader for Jazz at the Lincoln Center's youth program. The Human Hands feature the violin stylings of Oregonian Alex Hargraves. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion in Portland. The Mochitsky Festival celebrates the New Year by sharing Japanese-American culture with the community. The festival features hands-on activities for all ages, cultural foods, vendors, and a wide variety of demonstrations and performances, including taiko drumming, Japanese dance, storytelling, mochi pounding, martial art demos, and much more. Again, that's the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion, 930 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We will not bow down to racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation. I'm gonna stand. I'm gonna stand.
Now this is time for free your mind and your soul. Right?
Come and take a walk with me. Closer walk with these. See what only I can see.
Sisters, check this. Watch this.
Opportunity, you in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free, don't hinder me, let me be.
I'm fighting for freedom, I got the heat in case you need them. A straight soldier, ain't nobody told ya.
We've been together since I created border. The African border celebration is in order.
My only chance of being free is to fly within me, and it's illegal to kill a freaking eagle. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his freedom.
Telling us these lies, but everybody. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM. Olivia is at a union meeting tonight. So, Olivia, we love you. We'll see you next week. But keep the fight alive. Very important work that's going on. And if you are somebody who is looking for a job, the Portland DSA Labor Working Group hosts regular socialist job fairs. It's not that the socialists are hiring, but that there are people all over the city that want to recruit people who are looking for jobs, who are ready to build the socialist movement and worker power at the point of production, where we engage with capitalists to organize, to fight back, to improve the standard of living for all co-workers, and to build a larger movement toward worker power and dignity on the job. So if that's you, get in touch. They happen pretty regularly, and I can let you know when they're coming up, and if you're interested, how to get in touch with the organizers so that you can get plugged in. For people who are just tuning in that maybe don't know too much about what we do on the show here, we bring people on who are working on campaigns to give them a platform so that you can get involved, particularly when there is a struggle in the streets happening. And it's wintertime. I know a lot of people are not trying to brave the cold and the rain, so I get it. So we've been able to talk a little bit about our hot takes on things, and we did that last week. And to everybody that had beef with Olivia, Olivia, you're not here to interrupt right now, but Olivia had some critiques of our friend Elizabeth Warren, and we're allowed to do that. And I'm sorry to anybody that didn't like some of those hot takes, but we're gonna press on the show. And with that, I'm here to let you know that the Portland DSA reached out to let me know that there's going to be a canvas for Bernie Sanders on Sunday, and they want people to come learn about the chapter and the Universal Preschool Ballot initiative. And this is at 10 a.m. This Saturday, so tomorrow, 10 to 1 at Peninsula Park Community Center. That's at 700 North Rosa Parks Way. And they're going to be serving free breakfast. So come eat something, talk some politics, learn about the Universal Preschool Initiative, and then canvass for the DSA-endorsed candidate Bernie Sanders. Tomorrow's going to be packed because there's other stuff happening at the same time. So y'all have some options if you're looking to get active tomorrow. Because also there's Fixing North Portland's Mail. It's a community meeting with Earl Blumenauer to talk about the need to end the disastrous pilot program and fix North Portland's mail. That's going to be at Celebration Tabernacle Church, 8131 North Denver. And that's at 9:30 to 10:30. So if you want to do both, you might be able to pull it off. Just you might miss some pancakes, or at least miss them while they're hot. Then there's the No War with Iran Global Day of Protest. That's at 2:30 at Pioneer Courthouse Square, at 701 Southwest 6th Ave. And this is the second one. The first one was the day after the Trump administration assassinated Soleimani, and the fallout has increased ever since then, with the world mostly looking in horror at the kind of precedent that this sends. So this is in solidarity with a global day of action. There are other cities across the world that are doing similar action. So this is Portland's bid to try to throw down and show people that we ordinary people coming out into the streets to reject the idea that the U.S. should be aggressing in Iran. So, and more than that, it's U.S. out of the Middle East. So calling on people all over the world to rise up and say that this is not appropriate and there should not be U.S. influence anywhere in the Middle East. So again, that's being co-hosted, actually. So not just Portland DSA, but also Code Pink, part of the national organization. So shout out to people like Code Pink who are coming to Portland to try to get some anti-war movement stuff going here. So that will be exciting. Again, that's tomorrow, January 25th, 2:30 to 4. Then later, remembering Aaron Campbell. We talked about this last week, but just wanted to bring this up again. Aaron Campbell killed by Portland police. This is going to be at the Maranatha Church. That's 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. And that's going to be tomorrow at 5 to 6:30. So thank you to everybody that's putting this on. Aaron Campbell, one of many people who were killed by Portland police. And we still don't have justice for him or for many other people who've been killed by Portland police with no answers, no justice. So we continue to cry out. So we'll remember Aaron Campbell. It's called Remembering Aaron Campbell, Stop the Violence. Again, that's tomorrow, January 25th, 5 o'clock at Maranatha Church, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. And finally, like, tomorrow's a busy day. If you've got the day off and you're serious about the movement, you actually don't have a day off because you might need to get your butt to some of these events. Another one with Earl Blumenauer. This one is with Rashida Tlaib. Please join Rashida for, and me, Blumenauer. This is from his website, for our Housing Justice Town Hall. So if you missed Rashida last night at the Hyatt for her talk like I did, you'll be able to catch her. You have to RSVP, though. There's a housing crisis in virtually every community across America, in the wealthiest country in the world. This is unacceptable. The residual damage of past housing discrimination and continued discrimination today necessitates a commitment to restorative justice in our housing policy. Please join special guest Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from Michigan District 13 and our representative to discuss our legislation to solve America's housing crisis and ensure housing is treated as a fundamental human right. This is big talk. RSVPs have now closed. If you still like to attend the event, though, see the event info below and sign in upon arrival. So this is tomorrow. Doors open at 1:30 at Jefferson High School in the auditorium at 5210 North Kirby Avenue. So if that sounds like something that you want to go to, I'll be there. So you can say hi, and I'll try to get audio for the show next week. And for people who are not familiar with Rashida Tlaib, you should get familiar. We have an interview from Detroit where she talks about what it's like to live there, what it's like to represent people from there. Olivia, I'm sorry that you're not here this week. So we're going to play interview that Rashida did earlier this year and hit it. Thank you, Jerome, my producer.
From when we were at your victory party back in November, could you have imagined how this was going to go 8 months now into the job? Is this what you thought it would be?
No, it's so much more different than that. I mean, I think my residents are the same. Their issues are the same. My passion is the same. But I mean, it's still surreal to me every time I walk onto the United States, House floor. My father only had fourth grade education, my mother eighth grade education, and here I am, the first in the family to graduate from high school and college and go on and, you know, help run all these amazing movement work and nonprofit agencies. But I'm there, and not only that, I mean, I think so many people see the national, narrative about me, but it's what's lacking, I think, is I'm so much more just a Muslim and a Palestinian woman, but I'm also this girl that grew up in Southwest Detroit that's got a little grit, you know, and a little fight in her. And then one of the best questions I got asked, I think my first month, is like, why do you fight so hard? I was like, thank you for asking me that, because let me tell you my story. Let me tell you about the fact that my father had cancer. Let me tell you about, the fact that I grew up in a community where we had three high schools, and now we only have one, and the rest are charter schools and not really providing for our kids, right? And I tell them I fight because I have two incredibly wonderful boys that shouldn't grow up being afraid to tell people their background, their ethnic or faith background, that are also asking me, what are we doing about our AR mom? My 14-year-old tells me all the time, 2030 is like around the corner, like do something, mom. It has been an incredible journey, and the one humbling experience is my residents, many of which, the majority of which, do not share my faith. They don't share my ethnic background, mm-hmm. and they believed in the possibility of someone like me that doesn't take corporate PAC money. It's not your polished politician, I'm still that girl from Southwest Detroit that cannot stand corporate greed. I cannot stand corporate bullies. I can't stand it when my residents feel like they're less than because some billionaire comes along and says, you don't need these millions of dollars to your school district. I need to build a stadium. And I'm telling them, no, it can actually be different. And let me show you why, and let me show you how. And that's the part that I keep bringing forward and centering on. One of the things I tell my staff every committee hearing in DC is, let's bring the residents in the room with us. How do we do that? So we always start with a story of somebody impacted by college debt, if that's mm-hmm. what the hearing's about. If it's about air quality, about PFAS, I tell people, these contaminated, it's not only in rural areas. Guess what? I found it in Melvindale, in Delray, in Detroit. I mean, this is real, and let me tell you what is actually happening to my residents at home, and then I get into the policy. But yeah, it's been an incredible journey, but coming home to the four neighborhood service centers keeps me rooted in the community, keeps me grounded. That's where I get all my bill ideas. That's where I feel sane. Am I crazy, or is this how it's supposed to be? Why does everybody think this is normal? It's not normal to smell like rotten eggs after your kids have played outside. It's not normal to have this many trucks come through by parks and schools. It's not normal that we're closing schools every single day, but then providing these big tax giveaways to mega billion-dollar corporations. Mm-hmm. It's not normal.
Is it hard to have that dual narrative of what maybe Washington, D.C. or national media yeah. perception is of you versus what the perception is of you at home and people who know Rashida Tlaib? Has that worked in your favor, or has that negatively impacted what you've been able to do or attention to bring to the 13th?
Yeah, I mean, the four neighborhood services are created within, 6 months of me being in office has really been kind of the heart and soul of my public service. I bring that forward every time I talk about these issues, but I bring forward, I don't care what they're asking me, I will go around and say, well, the American story that you haven't heard is my district is the third poorest congressional district in the country, and they elected me. because I was different, not because of my background.
But do you find sometimes that you have to spend more time getting past the initial headline that's coming out about you or around you or what they're asking you to comment on to be able to then push forward the issues that you want to? Where's the balance there?
No, I use that opportunity to talk about my residents, and I do a fairly good job lately of doing that, and it's been interesting because, you know, I'm so much more than this narrative out there, which I love that it inspires. You know, this 8-year-old girl came up to me and she had this shirt on. It was beautiful, this blazer. And she kept going like this, and that's the mom cue of like, oh, she wants me to say something about her blazer. I said, well, that's a really nice blazer. And she goes, I'm trying to look like you. And I said, okay, well, you don't have to run for Congress. You should run for president. And she goes, uh-huh. And I thought to myself, well, that's an incredible, like, to me, that's something I'm inspiring, obviously, a whole nation of these beautiful young girls that now see themselves here. But I also hope that they see themselves as beyond their identity, like, you can fight like me. You could be who you are and fight just like me, you know, not backing down and being strong and not allowing bullies and others to try to put you in this box that's all you are, that you are also this person that wants to combat poverty and push back against corporate bullies and corporate polluters. You could be all those things and be proud of everything. You know, all the for me, my grandmothers who helped raise me, my mother, my father, all of these incredible people in my life that taught me that justice has to be like part of your soul as you move forward, because that's who you are. You as a Palestinian, of your family struggling for equality there, to, you know, be Muslim in America, all of that is so connected to why I fight so hard.
Do you think you have changed the conversation about women in power, especially given the women and the attention that you've received in Congress and the squad label of you and some of your other freshman colleagues? Are you tired of that label yet, or is it okay to still keep pushing forward with
that? Well, you know, my original squad is the 13th district, and I tell them all the time, I said, this is my squad, and the squad is so much bigger than just us four. But what I love about us four is many of us didn't really know each other until we got there, but it was our shared values. And organically, everybody on the outside did it. We didn't ask for it. We didn't, you know, come forward and say, this is what we're gonna be all of a sudden. And at first I was like, what is that? Like, what do you mean the squad, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like some sort of like, hey, but it's anybody that believes in equitable justice. It's anybody that believes that people have to breathe clean air. Then you're part of the squad, that you're part of people that want to serve in Congress. Unapologetically fighting for issues that I feel like has been, you know, not as at the forefront as it should be. You know, people always talk about in the same breath when they used to talk about Marathon Oil Refinery, jobs. Well, now I'm saying, let's start with jobs can't fix cancer, and then let's move from there. So all of us, not only my four colleagues, number of my colleagues, are incredibly authentic and real. Some have never held office before. One woman has never had health insurance until she became a member of Congress. Another is a survivor of domestic violence. I love that, you know, one ran on the fact that she has a pre-existing condition. She's a nurse, and that's what she fights for, is healthcare. I love that these are real people. Many of them are women that are coming with their authentic self forward on these issues with the sense of urgency that you hear from me sometimes, mm-hmm. is exactly mimics their urgency because they're living that experience now.
You're here every week.
Yes.
What are the people of the 13th telling you? And again, in that kind of parallel different vision of who you are here versus what you have to do to survive and get around in DC.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, coming home every single week is grounds me. It reminds me of why I even ran in the first place. And the district, you know, common theme is don't sell us out. Just don't, you know, do what you're doing right now. And if there's anything else that, you know, you could do, you know, keep pushing it. But my residents are thrilled with the service centers, and they're thrilled about, you know, Rashida, you had a hearing on auto insurance. Thank you. We have the highest rates of auto insurance. We had a housing crisis committee hearing recently here about what happened with the Wayne County tax foreclosure issue and the crisis there. So we brought that forward, and now we're going to probably ask for an investigation into that, the fact that people were denied getting their homes assessed. A lot of conversation around what can we do about the education system right now. So we started a task force on the education issue. But all of my legislative work groups that I created mm-hmm. are grassroots organizations here. My legislative work group here convenings happen here, not in DC. Because it's national organizations, some of which that work on environmental justice might be working on wildlife. But here, we're working on air quality and trying to reduce asthma and trying to address the fact that we're now seeing a spike of cancer in areas that we never saw before. It is that kind of work that they're saying, finally bringing that forward. Not in the way where I say it's bad, but like going beyond just saying, I agree that we need to do something, but actually doing something mm-hmm. and the way we do it is bringing their human stories forward. And when you do that, when I introduced that bill that I did with Senator Peters saying Petco, you know, should be on the toxic list, we should be doing something about it. There is a connection, a human connection that I think always gets lacking, you know, always gets disconnected when people work in Congress.
Talk to me about what some people say to you, like, we're going to be here this afternoon when hopefully this gym is going to be packed and you'll yeah. be talking about environmental justice essentially here in this area of the state. What do they say to you when they come up to you? And I would assume that everyone's either got a criticism or yeah. something else to say or something to add, or you should be doing this, or what are some of the conversations that you have with people?
No, I get a commonality is water is a human right. You make sure you say that, Rashida, because I have a right to drink clean water. Why is my child going to a school that doesn't have clean water? What do I pay my taxes for? Why is it that we get chosen second and profits are first? I hear people saying, one woman today, I mean, we have a right to breathe clean air. That's all I'm not asking for, you know, access to a country club, Rashida. I'm not asking for a handout. I'm asking for clean air. So there's a sense of this, you know, they're living this experience now, and they just want to feel heard and believed. Our water right now going into our homes might be actually infested with lead. People are really fearful of that, that their public health, that their selves, their right to breathe, their right to live is at jeopardy if we don't do something about it immediately.
How do you tell them then to trust government? Trust what I'm doing in Washington or what I'm trying to do in Washington, that the system does work, that we can help you in some way, when a lot of people have absolutely no faith that you guys can't agree on anything in Washington or get anything done.
Yeah, and I'm one of them, even though I'm there. But the thing is, people like us don't think about running for office, and I think that's probably the biggest problem is getting people in the institute. But more importantly, I'm reminded I always remind my residents, and I'll probably talk about it today, that transformative change on civil rights, transformative change even on getting women access to vote, didn't happen in the halls of Congress or in the White House. It happened because of the consciousness in the streets, the movement work in the streets. I mean, you see us now finally moving Fight for 15 passed out of the House, the minimum wage, one fair wage. That didn't happen because somebody introduced a bill in Congress and had an awakening. No, it's because local municipalities were passing them, local communities. They were getting arrested on the streets in front of McDonald's and service industry saying, we have a right to a living wage. We have a right to provide for our children. And so I'm reminded of that because I grew up in the most beautiful, blackest city in the country where every corner is a reminder of the civil rights movement. I remember as a young person hearing Grace Lee Boggs say that it has to be done in the streets. It has to be done in movement work. We cannot rely just on the consciousness of Congress and so forth. It has to start with all of us.
Your kids are watching you.
Yeah.
Very closely.
Yes,
and I'm sure they're probably
my 14-year-old
getting some flack. A little bit. They see headlines. They read things.
Oh, yeah.
How do they adjust with what you do, and what do you say to them about what you're doing?
So my 14-year-old is probably the most aware of what I do than my 8-year-old. But my 14-year-old, Adam, you know, I remember him coming up to me and saying, Mom, I don't get it. Why is everybody talking about capitalism, socialism? What about peopleism? He grounds me. And I was like, you're right, baby. You're absolutely right. It has to be about people first. And then I remind him that there's more humanists in this world, people like us, that understand the human impact, understand there's a we have to be humanists first before we're Republicans or Democrats or capitalist, social, whatever these labels that we put on each other. But so much of, he has no idea, like I'm trying to console him, and this 14-year-old child is like saying things to me that just make me smile, like, oh my God, that's the next generation, that he gets it, that I'm like, I can't wait for them to run for office. I love it. I was in a meeting with Chairwoman Maxine Waters talking about divesting in fossil fuel investments. And my son was with me, he was on break, and he's with me in Washington, D.C., and I take him to all meetings because he loves it. And he sits in the background, he goes, Mom, give me a piece of paper. I was like, for why? He's, I was like, in the meeting, you know? And he goes, just give me a paper. So I, as a mom, I had some envelope in my, and moms do this all the time. I rip this like blank envelope.
Here's just a little thing of paper, and yeah, just pass it along.
And I just give it to him. And I'm thinking he's gonna sketch or something. He usually does that. And he passes me a note, and I still have it, that said, Mom, make sure you tell them we only have until 2030, that the planet only has until 2030. After the meeting, I get it, I smile. And after the meeting was done, and to two members of Congress, Chairwoman Maxine Waters stands up, and I said, I know you all heard my son, who wasn't really whispering, asking me for a piece of paper. Do you know what he wrote? And I showed them. And at that moment, you could see it, all of them having this like reminder of like why we're here.
This is
why
what you're doing it for.
Exactly. But yeah, it's amazing. And I'm constantly reminding not only my nieces, my nephews, all of my extended family. I'm the eldest of 14, so I have a huge family that's constantly watching and seeing. And they believe me when I tell them there's more people like us with this consciousness of for humanity than there are those that are saying these ugly, hateful things. And you have to outwork the hate. You have to. You have to be so grounded in that, and you have to outwork the hate. You do it through love. You do it through the service centers. You do it through these kinds of hearings of starting off with saying, I believe you all. I believe you are now breathing in dirty air. That I believe you, that you feel like you deserve better. I believe you. And if we start with that, I think we can really have transformative change and support the movement work that happens outside of the halls of Congress. And I'm excited. I'm excited to be that extension for all of them. And I love that Marisa's like, you're so different. And it's not because of my ethnic, it's because of how I talk about it. And how, if anything, I'm still their daughter. I was raised here. I saw it. I lived it.
Do you field a lot of phone calls and texts from your extended family saying, Rashida, you should do this.
Oh,
or maybe
goodness.
I should do this next time. Or way to go. Or what is that like?
Well, I love it. So, you know, of course, the famous first day I get sworn in, of course, I use a terminology out there that, you know, for me is just who is part of like, the part of my authentic self, you know. And I remember one of my seniors calls me. I call her seasoned residents. One of my residents called me after that, and she goes, hey, you know, I don't use that word. I don't think anybody should use those words. And I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And she goes, but I have to tell you, I felt more liberated when you did. And I'm smiling over the phone, and I said, okay. She goes, I know that you're as angry as I am. But you speaking like that, speaking about it in that way, I felt it, and I felt more freer because you're there and you are speaking truth to power. So I think there is this always this hesitation, but more of like protecting me and wanting to make sure I do well. You know, so many call me and say, what can we do to help or support? Those that always want to kind of give advice is, it's always about, you know, things that I think don't matter, which is my hair. But I love my mothers in the community and others that, you know, come from a school of thought that you have to be dressed a certain way, you have to look a certain way. And I tell them, no, I can be in my jeans and my backpack with my bullhorn, and I'll still be able to wear my pin and still be as equal as anybody else that represents 650,000 people. You don't have to fit the same mold. And I don't want to. It's just, I'm not comfortable in that skin. This is who I am.
We're rolling into an election year, obviously. I want to talk a little bit about the economy and how it's impacting your constituents and the opportunity for jobs or opportunity for job training and the importance of that in the area right now.
So I think one of the things I did immediately, one of the first bills I introduced is the Boost Act. And I have the third poorest congressional district in the country. And the people that are working, a lot of them working poor, they're in the service industry. They're in an industry that is not going to lead to a pension, a humane retirement avenue for them, or a job that's going to help them send their children to college if they wanted. And so for me, I needed to show them what was possible. And so I repealed the GOP tax scam, is what I like to call it. President Trump and some of his supporters in Congress passed this pretty much a tax break for the wealthy. And that's what it was. I mean, most of the corporations use that big tax break to give shareholders a big payout. I repealed that and I said, nope, we're gonna do earned income tax credit on steroids. We're gonna shift this and give people a tax credit between $3,000 to $6,000, up to $6,000 if you make less than $100,000. But get this, you can also be a student, be on disability income, maybe not be working and still get up the minimum of $3,000. It would uplift 45% of Americans living in poverty right now out of poverty. 45%, that's half of people living in, close to half of people living in poverty right now in the United States. That would be uplifted just showing people, because I love when people ask me, how are you gonna pay for it? It's like the GOP tax scam that didn't really do much. It didn't. I mean, if you look at it, what it did much of is supporting big, big, mega billion dollar corporations. Not even my small businesses are benefiting from it. And when I put money in the pockets of everyday Americans that are struggling, literally $400 away from getting into the cycle of poverty, that feeds right into our local economy. Everybody has said, nonpartisan think tanks have said, put money in regular Americans, they turn around and they spend that money right in their local neighborhoods and their community, which helps small businesses, help viability, and to me, creates a more of a sustainable pathway for people to live with a good quality of life.
Let's talk a little bit about immigration, where we are right now. You have mm-hmm. a lot of people who are fearful of deportation, especially where we live. And also you've got dreamers in Michigan who feel like that they are still waiting for something to be done. Talk about what the conversations are right now in Congress, and are we going to get anywhere?
Yeah, and that's the hard part, is that you have a hate agenda right now coming out of the administration. And that's what it is. If you look at what they're doing in HUD, in housing, immigration, but even economic-wise, they are targeting a whole class of Americans that fit into this, I call it othering. You know, they're othering folks. They're kind of putting the focus on this kind of hate agenda, which if you look at who's benefiting the most on the broken immigration system, it's the same corporations he gave the tax break to. They're the ones caging up the children, making $750 a day, some of them. These are the same companies that are feeding into the mass incarceration, the for-profit prisons that we have in this country. The same people that funded his inauguration committee, all of that is so interconnected with the fact that he continues to feed in allowing an inhumane immigration system to exist. There are members of Congress that are bringing forward horrifying stories, people with medical illnesses that are now getting put in the process of deportation. These are people that if they left, they would actually die in their native country. We even saw it here in Michigan with this young man who had diabetes, who was deported. He was born in a refugee camp in Greece. He comes here and, all of the issues and challenges he had, they still put him in a plane without even contacting family members. And they sent him to Iraq, where he's never been. We need a much more humane, American value-driven immigration system. And we cannot continue to allow, all of us to vilify this whole community and saying that's why we're suffering. No, it's the same people that don't believe you need a tax break, or the mm-hmm. same people that are, turning our education system into a for-profit industry.
So where's the common ground then? Because you can have all of these stances and ideas and even push through certain policies, but if you don't get agreement on the other side, if you don't have any Republican buy-in, where do we end up?
Yeah, we have to continue putting forward what the system and how broken it is, right? That's the one thing that came during committee. You'll hear some of my colleagues on the other side say, yeah, it is broken. I said, well, let's fix it together. Because there are immigrants right now, literally my immigrant neighbors who are married to U.S. citizens for years have been here, and they can't adjust their status here. or the Dreamers. These are folks that we know, if we give them a pathway, they actually are going to strengthen our country. We're going to benefit from allowing them to be able to have access to a pathway to citizenship. Why can't we come to that common ground, right? And I'm still waiting for the Senator McCain of our caucus. I remember watching some of my other Republican colleagues, even as an activist in the street, that were like, yes, we need a fair and just immigration system. But until we recognize it's broken and agree that this is the pathway, because a wall's not going to do it. And that's the one thing that they agree, at least. They're like, nope, we know the wall's fake. But they won't publicly say it. They won't go out there and say it. They'll say things in committee, but then around the corner, they know.
Have you had to figure out who the show horses are from the workhorses?
Yes, very right away. I can usually tell where they go out, they say things, and then before the committee, and then on the side, they say, this is madness. Then say something, right? You know, the political courage that's lacking when it comes to the immigration issue is very prevalent. But, you know, a black pastor in my district said something profound to me, and it's always resonated. It's Pastor Bland Jr., and he said, we're not a country that's divided, we're a country that's disconnected. And I feel like when this comes to this issue, we're disconnecting. I think if you look at the people, again, benefiting from the broken immigration system, the people making actual money and detaining and imprisoning and allowing immigrants to live in this shadow and this workforce that we all know exists out there, getting, you know, wage theft is high among there, allowing them to not be able to come forward and be paid living wage, all that is connected to the same people that are pushing for the big tax breaks, you know, the for the rich and so forth. They're all the same corporations, if we open up the curtains, that are trying to dismantle our public education system. Just not talking about restorative justice, but mass incarceration. If you open up that curtain, it's the same individuals. And I feel like that needs to happen for us to be able to move forward and say we have to do something to fix our immigration system.
We've danced around the name, but we haven't quite said it yet, President Trump. It was no surprise, I think, to everyone who lives in your district and in this area that you came out vehemently for impeachment.
I ran against on it.
And then you ran on it.
Yeah.
Because in 2016, when he gave his speech to the Econ Club, you were one of the people who stood up and disrupted it and was escorted out. I mean, it was plain as day. I mean, there was really no secret as to how you felt about it. Have you had anyone come from your party and say, look, it's an election year, we need to tone down impeachment? Yeah. Or have you, what kind of conversations have you had and where are you with us?
Yeah, no, I mean, what's incredible is that this past election, if you look at the numbers, I mean, it was high. I mean, I had a 60% increase in my district of turnout in a non-presidential election year. But even statewide, you saw, just massive turnouts in the last election. And I really believe it was a referendum on this current administration, that it was a calling to say, we're electing the jury that will hold this administration accountable. And I am very much standing by the fact that that's what I'm supposed to do as a member of House Oversight Committee, is hold his administration accountable. We've already held 3 members of his cabinet in contempt for misleading Congress, for not following through on congressional subpoenas. I mean, we really are in a dangerous pathway that is directly impacting our democracy. The fact that we have an upgraded version of pay to play, I mean, this is a person now that if you want to do any business with his administration, you have to go stay at the hotel, in his hotel, Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. You saw it with T-Mobile, who wanted to merge with Sprint. T-Mobile spent like $200,000 at the Trump Hotel in the same breath that they were trying to get them to agree to the merger. One of the things that is very clear to me, too, is, you know, every single president before him, from President Carter, who divested in his bean farm, to every single one, if you were CEO, you had to walk away from all of that when you took the oath of office. And when you don't, it is directly in violation of our United States Constitution. And we're getting far away from that because he's distracting us, right? Not only with the tweets, but the hate rhetoric. He's distracting us from the fact that, yeah, he's actually using our federal government. He's running his business. He's a CEO sitting in the White House that is putting his businesses first, because he knows this is not a permanent gig for him, right? When he leaves office, he goes right back into his, international and domestic businesses. That's really dangerous. That for us, the corridor to power is through his hotels, is through his businesses, and we see him shifting money and dollars out of the military to support, you know, some of his resorts that are really going under. We saw that recently. I mean, it's direct violation of the United States Constitution. All I can do is put my country first and put my our Constitution first. I mean, I took the same oath. When a veteran in my district goes to me, I would have already been dishonorably discharged with half of the things he says and even his actions. The fact that we're allowing a president to continue blatantly violating the land, you know, law of the land, is setting a dangerous precedent, because this will not be the last CEO that runs for president of the United States.
All right. That is Rashida Tlaib. You can hear more from her. She's going to be in town. Well, she's in town right now. She might even be listening right now. Rashida, what's up? The Struggle, we love you on this show. And we love that you cursed at Trump. And if I wasn't so sure that the FCC would shut me down, I'd be cursing them out too on the air. And Olivia will be right there with me. So again, this is tomorrow, Saturday, January 25th at 2 p.m. But the doors open at 1:30. And if you have not already RSVP'd, then you should get there early. And this is coming straight from Earl Blumenauer's website. That's at Jefferson High School Auditorium, 5210 North Kirby Avenue. And particularly, this is going to be a conversation between Blumenauer and Tlaib for the Housing Justice Town Hall. So, of course, like, Portland is in crisis, but this is from Blumenauer's website. Again, it says, there is a housing crisis in virtually every community across America, in the wealthiest country in the world. This is unacceptable. The residual damage of past housing discrimination and continued discrimination today necessitates a commitment to restorative justice in our housing policy. Amen. Now, will you do it? Please join special guest Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from Michigan District 13 and me to discuss our legislation to solve America's housing crisis and ensure housing is treated as a fundamental human right. So get down there and listen to her brilliance tomorrow. Also, there are a couple announcements that I missed. So thank you to people who told me about these events. This is going to be at City Hall Thursday, January 30th, coming up 1:30 to 3:30. It says, tell City Council we want a strong Broadway corridor CBA or community benefits agreement. This is from the Healthy Communities Coalition, who I haven't even worked with yet. So thank you to y'all for saying this. Yes, we want a strong Broadway corridor CBA. This is from them. Thank you for sending it in. Join the Healthy Communities Coalition at City Council to support a strong community benefits agreement for the Broadway corridor. HCC is in the final weeks of negotiation with Prosper Portland, the city developer Continuum Partners, over a legally binding CBA for downtown's Broadway corridor. Join us to demonstrate support for a CBA that, built on a foundation of racial equity, delivers standard-setting good jobs, quality, affordable housing, and opportunities for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and people with disabilities and working-class communities. All that. Okay, let's see. It's time for a new way forward for economic development in our city. So, again, that's Thursday, January 20th, 1:30 to 3:30 at City Hall. So, yes, thank you for that. And then also, I'm sorry, I forgot this. I'm going to be there, so come say what's up if you're Black or brown. The Socialists of Color Organizing and Social Hour is Tuesday, January 28th at 8 to 10. And that's at the IWWD Industrial Workers of the World House, 2249 East Burnside. So all Black and brown comrades out here that are tired of not seeing enough people on the left in your people of color spaces and not enough people of color in your socialist spaces, it is a big problem. I feel your pain. Come out. and say what's up. And that is on top of the events that I already spoke about earlier. We have Remembering, Aaron Campbell, Black Man, Killed by Portland Police, No Justice, No Answers, No Compassion, One of Many, and the list continues to grow. This is hosted by Peter Parks, a comrade in town. Thank you very much. It's going to be at Maranatha Church, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue in Portland. This is tomorrow. Again, there's a lot of stuff going on tomorrow, so this is one of many. This is at 5 o'clock until 6:30, Remembering Aaron Campbell, Stop the Violence. Then early in the morning, Blumenauer, who's going to have a busy day, I'll see you twice tomorrow, and I won't interrupt, I promise. I'll be on my best behavior, don't worry. This is for Fix North Portland's Mail. We know and have already talked about the pilot program that has been launched that is failing the people who receive mail, the people who deliver the mail. It's all bad. So that event is happening tomorrow. Earl Blumenauer is going to be there to have a community meeting, and that's at 9:30 to 10:30 at Celebration Tabernacle Church. Shout out Edie Mondenay, the president of the NAACP and the preacher at that church. Hallelujah. That's 8131 North Denver Avenue. And I'm not making fun by saying hallelujah. I'm not a religious person, and I really like Edie Mondenay. We work together on the Poor People's Campaign. It's all love. Thank you. We love a social justice preacher. Okay, pray with your feet. We love that. Also, No War in Iran, Global Day of Protest, and it's U.S. out of Iran and the Middle East. This is Portland Democratic Socialists of America and Code Pink. That is tomorrow at Pioneer Courthouse Square from 2:30 to 4. So get down there with your signs, get rowdy, and show the rest of the world that Portland knows how to throw down and flex its anti-imperialist muscles. So we'll see y'all out there. Early in the morning, free breakfast. I think they're doing pancakes at Peninsula Park Community Center. That's at 700 North Rosa Parks. And this is for a canvas for Bernie Sanders. The DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, endorsed him. And if you've never door knocked before, there will be people there that you can link up with. And if you are like me, and you're very unapologetic about wanting a much more robust welfare state, that's why I'm going to be out there knocking. Because, I was one of those welfare kids whose life was turned upside down when they decided to implement austerity. And it's only gotten worse. And people are not able to eke out the meager standards of living that used to be available, and this is why we need Bernie in there, because I know that he's not going to falter. So that's what's happening tomorrow. It's going to be a busy day. So if you got time, get out there and get to one or more of these events. Talk about them more. They're all online. Every one of the events that I pull up is going to be on the calendars for Portland Jobs with Justice and the Portland Democratic Socialists of America. They keep their calendars updated on their websites. So I just want to help get the word out and get the signal out right here from KBOO Community Radio for the struggle. And if there are any events that are not already posted that I'm not talking about, but you want to get the word out, you can just send it in. Call into KBOO and leave a note, and you can leave your flyer on the table. It's very open. If you are not already a member of KBOO, then you should become one. And that way we can be really connected, especially so that when people have the gumption to go out into the streets, like that's the bend of the show. That's how I came to even be on the radio in the first place. I was a guest on a dozen shows on cable before I got my own, just trying to promote protests and campaigns that we've been working on. So I want to be able to offer that to any and everyone who's listening, so that if you and people who you know are getting together to fight for justice and you want the impact of what you're doing to be more widely and deeply felt, yes, absolutely. You can come on the show, or you can just tell me about your events, and we'll try to get it out there so that we can help build this movement to be stronger. It's one small thing, but people who are at home, not able to feel like they're connected to something, this is one small action that I hope will be able to inspire people to do more. So again, this is the calendar for Portland Jobs with Justice. You can go to their website and look at it yourself, so that if you miss something that I was saying, if you're driving and correctly did not grab a pen and paper and try to write something down, you can always just go to the Portland Jobs with Justice website, look at their calendar. Every event that gets endorsed by the board goes on the website, and they're all public and are meant to be shared and to try to get people to turn out for. And if you want people to turn out, you can always come to Portland Jobs with Justice meetings. Their meetings are posted, and propose that an event that you are hosting get endorsed so that you can get on the calendar. You can do that. The process for Portland DSA is similar. You can become a member of both. The Portland DSA one is under their solidarity calendars. You can get on there too. Mostly it's the local organizing meetings for any of the working groups that are going on. But when we do big turnouts like the one that is going to be happening tomorrow to say no war on Iran, that's when we really want people to turn out and come with signs, come with your friends, and come with a defiant spirit that has anti-war and anti-imperialism at its core. This is not going to be easy. We don't anticipate that we're just going to be able to hem and haw and get what we want here, but it's important that when they write history, that we're able to say that we waged a struggle, and that this is something that we came together with our friends and neighbors to fight for. We believe in justice, and not just for people here, but for people all over the world. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Thank you for listening to The Struggle. Olivia, I hope your union meeting was good, and I'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
And that was a struggle, and super interesting stuff. I'm guessing, just a wild guess, that a lot of people have been listening closely to these important matters that, again, you can hear a lot of it here on KABU. So let's start off with a couple messages from the KABU community.
The Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center wouldn't exist without the local folks who volunteer their time to help the homeless. In episode 4 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast, we meet Tiana, Pete, and John to learn what they do, why they volunteer, and what they have learned about the homeless and themselves as a result. You can find Local Folks at KABU.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center in Portland. Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra combine Celtic music, interactive lights, Irish dancing, and fun. Pre-show attendees are invited to participate in the Magical Music Petting Zoo, where they can touch and play instruments that inspire the creative mind. Again, that's the Katie Jane and Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. The time is 8 o'clock and I'm Ender Black. How are you? And I'm here another night here on the fourth Friday of the month, always on the fourth Friday of the month, which is usually the last Friday of the month, but not always. So yeah, that one's tricky, right? So thank you for tuning in to KBOO. And KBOO is a lot about, I guess that's kind of like the concept of community radio. It's about people usually talking about important subjects, important issues that affect us all in one way or another, you know. So because we can both agree, you and I here, that this world is far from perfect. It's the opposite land here in many respects. So with that being said, usually the main kind of reason or inspiration or motivation behind any work that I do on KBOO, really, the past year especially, is focus on music and